What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I'm your host, Brett McGrath, and we are back at you. Week 2 auction talk with my man, Nick, at the Wharf Sports Cards. Had a blast in week 1. We are coming at it harder in week 2. We take a quick look back, talk about cards that are exciting us across multiple platforms, dig into cards that are being consigned directly with Nick, and a bunch of other stuff. Make sure if you're interested in sending your cards to Nick, you hit that promo code. Link is in the show notes. Stacking 50, get $50 off your first consignment with Nick. I'm really excited about this series. Hopefully you are too. If you like what I'm doing, tell a damn friend, join the Patreon group, do all the things. All right, everyone, let's kick it to episode 2 of Auction Talk. All right, we are back with the second edition of a newly coined show on the Stacking Slabs feed, Auction Talk. I got my man Nick at the Wharf Sports Cards. We were just like diving into everything that we want to talk about ahead of this, and there's a lot of ground to cover. We covered a lot of ground last time, so we're just going to hit it. Nick, welcome back. How's it going?
Good, man. I'm glad to be back. Last episode was a blast. Got a lot of good feedback, so I'm even more juiced for this week, especially now that we have some results to talk about.
We're going to hit some auctions like we talked about from last time, or that we're kind of looking at. We're going to be looking at auctions across a couple different marketplaces this time. We're going to talk about auctions that are going on that are coming through Nick's world, but I feel like we've got to kind of maybe hit and touch on a few auctions that just closed. So maybe we start there. I guess, what is like top of mind for you as we enter kind of this new cycle, starting with stuff that maybe ended last week or last night specifically?
Yeah, man. So Mondays are my favorite now because all the consignments end on Sunday on PWCC. So like, I'm super anxious to wake up on Monday and see what everything ended for. You know, I got little kids, so I don't always get to stay up for extended bidding and watch everything happen live. I always try to because it's a lot of fun, but I didn't get to watch these end live. So it's all like Christmas the next morning when you wake up to see, you know, what everything ended for. So to touch on the five cards we talked about last week, we'll start with the Manning Contenders. The 98 Contenders gold ticket out of 25 PSA 7 was probably the surprise of the auction. Did a huge number, $10,200, which is the highest selling copy of that card by a mile. The last high sale was actually a BGS Authentic auto copy, and again, those were aftermarket autos. Those didn't come out of the packs with autographs. It did 6,000, so this cleared that by, you know, 75% or 66, whatever that math is. But yeah, that was a big sale. It did almost 2x what it did the same copy when it sold 3 years ago. So good return for the seller there.
Can I touch on that? I think it's for just sure. Interesting because that one obviously is a Manning collector, and I know there's a bunch of chatter in my Manning group chat about that card. You know, looking at the data around the last sale, because I was curious. I was like, man, that seems like a big number. And I think like the point to drive home is the fact that that card doubled in a 3 year span, and there had been no other public sales, not talking about like autograph version or anything, just that card. And I think it's kind of like, there's going to be this theme of this show, and it's basically what Nick talks about a lot, but like no recent comps. I just think it's like the more and more I'm focusing in on that, especially in like lanes and segments that I'm collecting in, you start to see it like play out in real time. And so that was one that like, I saw the number because there was a lot of chatter about it. Then I went and looked in Card Ladder, and then I was like, man, like doubled in 3 years. Like, that's not really normal in this era of collecting cards. So certainly just something I wanted to call out.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And I think when you kind of strip things back and really understand the significance of that specific card, that specific set, that specific parallel, like we talked about in the first episode, it's a big card, man. And I think if it's a card that a collector just plans on, you know, stashing away in their collection for for years, I think they're going to do just fine. It might seem like a big number today, but you know, if it's going to sit for another 3 years, you know, it might sell for a bigger number then. So
no doubt. What were the other ones that you wanted to talk about?
So we got the Brady Gold Vinyl. I'm going to touch on all five. I'll try to be kind of quick on some of these, but the Brady Gold Vinyl, it did about what I thought it would do. It sold for $9,900. I peeled that back a little bit just to kind of see what the more recent sales of all the gold vinyls for Brady had been. And it was actually the third highest gold vinyl Prism sale Brady card since October 2022. The only three higher sales were all PSA 10s. So it was the highest, you know, non-gem mint copy to sell out of all the years of gold vinyl since October 2022. So when you kind of look at it like that, it's actually a really strong sale at $9,900. The Frank Thomas Credentials Future PSA 10 did $7,500. Again, a good sale. Talking to the consignor on that, he didn't really know what it would do at auction. You know, when cards don't sell for so long, it's really hard to kind of ping a number on it. And I told him I thought it would do 7 to 9K. So I patted myself on the back when I saw it end at 7,500. It doesn't always happen that way. So I was happy with that sale, but that kind of lines up with, you know, we talked about Griffey kind of being at the top of 90s baseball. Then it's usually Bonds and Jeter. You know, a lot of times it's Jeter, sometimes it's Bonds, depending on the card. And then Thomas usually fills in at four at the highest. And that lines up with those sales. Griffey PSA 9, we haven't seen a Griffey or a Jeter PSA 10 sale, but the Griffey PSA 9 sold for 15K not too long ago. Jeter PSA 9 did 6K. So as a PSA 10, that's probably a, you know, 18K card. The Bonds did 16K. So Thomas at 7,500 makes sense compared to all those sales. The Tyson card, the Tyson rookie, the Super Sports Italian PSA 8, did 3,240. Which was a good sale. A copy sold last month for $2,640. So it was up since then, but this was a nicer copy than that. It was a little bit better centered. Some other tiny little flaws you could see on the last PSA 8. So that sale lines up. And then the Kobe Atomic, the last one, the 98 Atomic Refractor PSA 10, sold for $5,280. Initially, me and the consignor thought that was a little bit low, because we were going off the last comp, which was $7,500, I think, in July. But again, when we peeled that back and we looked at the last four comps, $5,280, $5,640, $5,760, and then there was the one at $7,500. So that one was probably just kind of an outlier sale, which you see that last sale being high and you're like, okay, I'm gonna get that for sure. But it doesn't always happen that way. But it did line up with sort of the average of the other sales.
So one of the things, just the theme in you talking about the relationship with the people that you're working directly with, you touched on it last week, and I feel like now's a good time to hit it. But I maybe talk about this idea, revisiting this idea of just like setting the right expectations with the people who are coming to you and, you know, going through the process of selling their cards. Like, as I reflected back on last week's episode, that's something that I certainly thought about a lot. What is it like in your world? Like, after, like, you have a conversation, you kind of try to give your best guess of like what you think based on everything that you know. And then the auctions close and then the final number's there. And then there's some interaction, I would imagine, with the people just to talk about like the results. Like maybe share a little bit about like that process and like setting the right expectations and then all the way through the card selling. Obviously, when the cards go way higher, like the Manning, than you anticipated, that's good things. But oftentimes cards go for less than you anticipate. So maybe share some perspective there.
Yeah, absolutely. The conversation that happens the most with me and a consignor is typically them wanting to know what I think a card will sell for, or cards will sell for, especially with this no recent comps movement. We've gotten a lot more of those cards, so it's kind of hard to value some of those cards because they haven't sold for a long time, right? And you know, the general market might be down, but a lot of these cards, as you can see with some of these sales, are not actually going down. So it's kind of hard to ping a number on some of these. But I always tell my consignors this as well. Like, I always estimate conservatively, and there's a few reasons for that. For one, we are in different times now, you know, as an economy, as a market, than we were last year, the year before, you know, 4 years ago during COVID. So that is a factor that matters. there's more auctions now than there used to be, right? There's how many different marketplaces. So you have to take that into consideration. You don't always know where people's eyeballs are going to be. And then just, I would rather be wrong on the low side than wrong on the high side, right? I don't want my consigners to say, you said this was going to sell for 10,000 and it sold for five, right? Like I might, people in the consignment world, this approach is the opposite of what everybody else does. Like if you go to auction houses and you talk to their sales reps, the majority of the time they're going to blow smoke up your butt and tell you that this car is going to sell for, you know, way more than it should sell for. It doesn't sell for that. They collect their money and then what, right? Like I'm playing the long game on this to where I really want that relationship and that trust to be there. Like I want people, I would rather lose consignments because I told them a low number, a low estimate, than have that, give that person a high estimate, have it underperform, have them be totally upset about the service in my opinion and all that, and then never come back, right? I'm playing the long game and I want these people to trust me and want to come back and use my service. So that's the conversation I have the most, but there's a lot of different conversations along those lines where I kind of have to, like you said, just set expectations. And it's usually bringing them down a notch from their expectations to kind of what I think is more realistic.
I love that. The long game, it's always a better game. Coming from a place of abundance is always a better way. It's hard. But I think you sharing kind of that perspective is interesting just to get in the minds of people who do what you do. So one of the things I know I want to talk, like we were messaging before and it'd be interesting, like, which I'm glad you brought this up, is just like talking about the Mahomes and the Luka sales recently. I want to touch on those. Before I do that, I want to talk maybe about just like we've got one of these episodes in the can, like maybe any feedback that you got. I think one thing, feedback across the board that I received was like, this is really fun content. Like, I like this. I like getting inside picture about like what you're doing. And then also just like getting deep in the weeds on cards, especially when they're like front and center and about to sell. I think one piece of feedback that I got from people were, or questions on, are you all going to cover cards that are outside of PWCC? And like we spoke about that and like, you know, this is auction talk. So we want to do our best to like give a full picture of what's happening in cards that are cool to us. And you'll see that in this episode or hear this in this episode. So that was just one thing, which I think is really good. Like, and I just want to call it like, I really appreciate people caring and giving feedback because it allows us as we're doing this and kind of getting it off the ground to think differently about kind of formatting approach, making sure we're getting a look at everything that's possibly out there. So I just wanted to share that up front. And Nick, I don't know if like anyone came to you, were there threads, things that you're thinking about after the last episode?
Yeah. You know, for me, it was all positive stuff about the dialogue, the format of the episode. You know, I think that was helpful feedback that you brought in about the kind of including, you know, any auction house or marketplace. I think that's helpful. And in some weeks, you know, Brett and I talked about this, some weeks it might be all PWCC cards. It might be all eBay cards. It's just going to be where the cool cards are. Right. And I noticed that doing this No Recent Comps newsletter, I noticed there really is ebbs and flows. Like even in my newsletter, there's sometimes I always have six cards and week to week, it's five eBay cards 1 week, four, you know, PWCC cards the next week, five PWCC cards the next week. It's week to week. So it just kind of depends where the cards are. But yeah, this is auction talk. So we want to talk about the cool cards wherever they are. So we'll keep doing that. But I think the overwhelming theme is like, we want to make this fun, right? Like we don't want to take ourselves too seriously and have fun with it. But also, like you said, diving into the weeds of some of these cards, I think it's helpful for us. Like I love that stuff. It makes me better at what I do. And I wish that there was more content like that. So I think other people just like hearing other people's perspectives and opinions and research on cards.
No doubt about it. It's amazing. So many cards come at you fast that you don't even realize that like two cards that have become such a part of this, like re-entering the hobby, ultra modern era, like just recently sold. And I'm glad you said, hey, let's talk about these cards together. Maybe, and if you're following along, I am showing visuals that I dropped the video in my Patreon group. If you want to see it, it'll be there. But we'll start with the Luca because we talked about this Luca last week, and the BGS9 sold in PWCC weekly for $168,000. And then we had the Mahomes 2017 Prism Gold out of 10 sell for $115,000 via Golden. So I know you probably have a lot on your mind based on you presenting, hey, we should talk about it. So like, where do you want to start?
So I want to hear your perspective first. I want to hear just your, you know, just looking at those two sales. I don't know how much you dug into, you know, either of them or the history of either of them or anything, but I'm curious what your kind of like first glance at those two sales opinion is.
So there's a lot of different things that I'm thinking about. And it's hard because I don't think I've like spent the time that I need to completely like say, this is what I think, but here are some things that I think are interesting. I think it is interesting that based on like the two different platforms they sold on, like one sold on Golden, one sold on PWCC. Mm-hmm. Does that matter? Like, how do we take that into consideration? Can we look at things outside of just these two cards when we're evaluating selling on different platforms and what happens? And I know like just in terms of, I'm a big segmentation breakdown data type of guy when I'm looking at data. I know CardLighter like allows you to do that based on platform. So like, that's something like it triggered that thought for me. Also, like, I don't know, like it, to me, it's this whole like element that the hobby is predicated and built off of that maybe could be like happening in real time with these two sales where you've got somebody like Patrick established. Both players are excellent, great players, like top player, one of the top players in their respective sports. But I think like it's interesting on the, Luka outsold Mahomes, especially in an inferior, by an inferior grading company, inferior grade in comparison with the nine by so much. It just has me thinking that like, no matter what, like this idea of potential in the hobby is always going to prevail, where it doesn't matter that Mahomes has three Super Bowls. What matters is what could be possible with Luka's career. And I feel like we get so caught up in it and just based on, you know, the way manufacturers position their products, rookie cards on boxes, this and that. And I'm not saying Luka hasn't accomplished anything. He certainly has, but he doesn't have the hardware yet. Also, like final note for me, and then I'll kick it over to you as I'm thinking about this out loud. When I got back in the hobby, everyone says basketball is a global sport. Basketball is all the market. So like, is there like an element of that where like we should just look at basketball cards and think they're worth more than football cards? There's an element of that, but also like football cards like have been kicking ass recently, and it's just like the sales are higher than they've ever been. And so the attention on football cards is greater than it's ever been. So I don't know if that matters or not. So that's just like off the cuff what's on my mind in looking at these. Did I hit anything you're thinking about?
I love it, dude. I love it. That's why I wanted to hear yours first, because I don't want to say exactly the same stuff as you, but I have some takes on your takes. And I think what you said makes sense. Like, I want to touch on that last part since it's fresh in my mind, but the whole international collector based thing, I think that's intriguing. And, I think there's some truth behind it, right? Like international collectors, like I specifically think of like the Philippines, I think of China, I think of like there's a big collector bases in some of these places, and they're basketball countries, right? Like they typically are. So they're collecting Jordan, LeBron, Steph, like Luka's the next guy in their world that they're collecting. There's a lot of Tatum collectors in Asia. I mean, there's a lot of basketball collectors. So there is truth to that. But I also think there's a lot of those collectors are starting to collect football, and they're not collecting seven different football players. They're collecting Mahomes and maybe Brady. So I think it's going to balance out over time, because collectors are collectors, right? Like if they love cards and they're seeing more NFL, like year to year, they're seeing it more, on social media, they're actually getting games broadcasted. Like some of these countries are having games played in their country, you know, not it hasn't gotten over to Asia yet, but football is becoming more international. And they're, like I said, they're collecting less football players than they are basketball players. So I think it could kind of balance out over time. I don't think you need as many international collectors in the football space if you're a Mahomes guy, because it's going to be concentrated on one or two guys. So, I think it's a fair point, but I also think it's maybe a little overblown, and I think we'll see that over time. But on these two cards specifically, on these sales, I think there's the potential versus the actually achieved argument is interesting. And when you think of it from a selling perspective, right, like Mahomes is accomplished. He won an MVP his first full season of starting. That's an opportunity to sell, right? He won a Super Bowl the next year. That's another opportunity to sell. He's won two MVPs and three Super Bowls. You've had five like career accolade achievement opportunities to sell and theoretically make money on Mahomes. Luka has had zero of those moments, right? It's all been potential. Again, he's had a great career. Like, he's off to one of the best starts ever for an NBA player, individual statistically, but no MVPs, very little playoff success, no championships. Like, when he wins an MVP or when he wins a title, you're going to see a lot of his high-end cards hit the market. We've seen the cycle multiple times for Mahomes, so naturally, the prices are going to come down. But I think we're at a point now with three MVPs. I think we're at a point where people that have been holding Mahomes are going to get out because they're going to make money. They've been holding him for years. And we're going to see some new collectors buying cards like this that are actually collecting him for the long haul. So I think there's going to be a change of the guard on who's going to own these cards. And if you know, I mean, just pay attention on social media. Some of the people that have owned a lot of high-end Mahomes cards, they were in it to make money. Like, let's just call it what it is. All right. The Luka guys, a lot of the Luka guys are in the exact same boat. They just haven't had the same opportunities to sell on achievements and make that money. And if you go, last point on this, just look at the sales history, right? We've seen two Luka gold prisms sell since October 22. We've seen four Mahomes gold sell in that same time frame. So, I mean, that kind of, paints the picture of what I just said right there. So I think that's important to consider.
I love it. The more and more I try to psychoanalyze data and markets and everything else, like, there's a part of me, when you get close to these auctions and you're trying to compare like the two, there's a part of me that's just like, there's like two people who just like really want this card mm-hmm. at this time, and they're battling mm-hmm. it out. And so there's so much narrative and so much, we're sitting here spinning up stuff, talking about it now, but like, I don't know, at the end of the day, sometimes it's just like, in that moment where that card is available, who are the two people who have money and that are just battling it out? And so that is the part of the hobby that, like, in those stories about those scenarios that I find really interesting, that I think end up driving the prices of these cards that we're talking about on podcasts like this.
That's 100% true. It is. And especially when you get into a six-figure market, it's like, the time of the sale really matters, and you don't know who's going to be ready at that time to spend that kind of money. But I will say, I saw who won that Mahomes gold, and it is a new Mahomes collector. So, I mean, that's interesting to me.
It is. And I wish I had the money to pay for something like that, because if I believe in football cards, that is one that surely stands out to me. Want to maybe like move it over to the world of sports, because sports and sports cards kind of they run parallel with each other. Curious, just in terms of, the NBA season, we're jockeying for a playoff position. We're about to start NCAA tournament. What are you paying attention to? Kind of like, what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, since we recorded last week, because we recorded on a Monday, we talked about Caitlin Clark. We talked about a Caitlin Clark card. We kind of, you were talking about her potentially going to the draft and the Indiana Fever having the number one pick. Well, she declared for the draft since then. Well, it looks like she's coming your way, which is exciting news. And then she played yesterday and passed Pistol Pete's NCAA record. So I got to watch a little bit of that. Dude, she's just so exciting. Like, even the beginning of that game, it was just like, like, you watch her and you just know, like, everybody on the other team just knows where she is at all time. And she's just like, the beginning
doesn't
of the
game, matter.
she just lets it come to her. She had like three assists on the first three possessions.
The passing is what doesn't get talked about enough.
I mean, her shots, like she missed her first two or three threes and they were like ridiculously hard shots and she's barely missing them. Like I'm like, her misses look good. And then she's just letting it come to her, just dishing it off with some really nice passes. And then she still ends up with, you know, whatever, 33 points and just dominated the game. So, you know, I'm sure you watched that game a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, I did. We had it on. And it was so fun to me, and it was like, it wasn't just anyone. They took it to the number two team in the country, Ohio State. And it was, her performance was special, you know, and just some like small, like Indianapolis, Caitlin Clark story. I was looking for something to do with my 2-year-old on Friday. And I was like, you know what, like, let's just go. It was not decent outside, a little chilly, but I was like, let's go down to Gainbridge where the Pacers and the Fever play. Let's go to the gift shop and just like, you know, run around, have fun, which if you're ever in Indianapolis, like even if you're not a Pacers or a Fever fan, like stop into the shop. It's really awesome. Like it's two floors. It's just awesome. So it was fun to see like the people in the store. And I was like, I specifically wanted to go because I wanted to ask the staff who were working at this store, just like, you know, retail, you know, workers, like what it's been like today. Cause this was literally like less than 24 hours post Caitlin Clark news. And one lady specifically was like, we've had multiple people coming in asking like when her jersey is going to be here, which, you know, I was like, it's just funny. She's got to get drafted to the team first. But it's amazing when something like a player like that, like something that significant happens. Like you had the Pacers Instagram congratulating Caitlin Clark on breaking Pistol Pete's record. You've had the Fever, like within whoever's running their social media, like 5-10 minutes after she made her announcements, the Fever were buy your season tickets now, and they were getting that process going. The Fever season tickets have doubled in price based on market demand. The Fever's first home game is not Caitlin Clark's first; her first game's away. Her first home game in Indiana is against the Liberty. So you've got Sabrina coming in versus Caitlin Clark in the first game. So it's like, she's taken over everything already here, which is fun. And she's not even here yet. So, it'll be very fun to see her come tournament time to see what she can do. But I can't remember really a player in college doing what she's doing now in terms of just like interest, demand, and just the conversation. Like, this is like the third or fourth recording I've had where Caitlin Clark's name has come up, which says something.
Dude, and last thing I'll say is I am way more excited to watch the women's NCAA tournament this year than the men's NCAA tournament, like by far. And that's crazy too for me to say, because I'm just such a – I love basketball and I love college basketball, and I usually – I'm a Kansas Jayhawks fan. So, like, I usually have a lot of reasons to watch men's college basketball. This year they're kind of struggling. We'll see what happens, but – I'm way more excited to tune into Iowa women's games this year in the tournament.
I'm 100% with you. Is there any other sports storylines that are on your mind that you want to talk
about? Well, now that football's over, I'm a bandwagon Nuggets fan. I don't know if you could call it bandwagon. So I started watching the Nuggets because of Michael Porter Jr. I coached him in high school. So naturally I was just going to follow his progression into the NBA. And, you know, starting to watch the Nuggets because of him, I was naturally drawn to Nikola Jokic and just the Nuggets culture and the Nuggets team. So now I'm a all-in Jokic fan. I'm an all-in Nuggets fan. I watch at least part of all of their games. Like, I don't miss any other games. And we're in a spot now, you know, Embiid was in the conversation, but he will not qualify for the MVP because of missed games. If the season ended today, Jokic would win his third MVP most likely in 4 years. And honestly, the year he didn't win MVP was his most dominant statistical year. So it's crazy. He honestly should be going for his fourth straight MVP. I talked about it in my newsletter. It puts him in a whole different category of player with three MVPs. That list of people with three MVPs or more is a list of eight people. I mean, it's a very short list. There's like seven that have two MVPs. So he'd go from a list of like 15 or 16 people to a list of eight people. which is significant. And I'm just curious how the hobby's going to respond, because his style of play is so different. Like, it's literally the opposite of any star we've seen in our generation. He doesn't rely on athleticism. He doesn't want to score first. Like, that's the last thing he wants to do is score, and he still averages 26 a game. He's just the opposite of what we're used to in a star. He doesn't want the fame. He doesn't want the glory. He literally tries not to win MVP. Like he's actively trying not to win MVP, and he's probably going to win MVP, which is what makes me and other Jokic purists love him even more. But I feel like it makes the other side of the spectrum hate him more and not want to collect him more. So I'm just very curious to see how the hobby responds if he wins the third MVP, and then especially if he adds a title to that as well. I'm curious what you think as a, you know, I know you're kind of like no dog in the fight, right? I'm curious what you think on that. What will happen?
Yeah, I think there's no way Jokic doesn't win his third MVP at this point. Like, literally, like, just by looking at his statistics, looking at what the Nuggets are doing, he's clearly the best player in the NBA on a night-to-night basis. And it's like, I've said this often about him in comparison with player that I love, Peyton Manning. They make their team so much better by being there that you take out that player and that team, they have so much talent. You mentioned like Jamal Murray, you know, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon. They've got all these guys. But like, I promise you, that team doesn't work without Jokic. And that's, to me, MVP. Like, I think, like, there's nothing that doesn't tell me that Jokic, if he steps on the floor, shouldn't just win it every year. And I think he didn't win it because there's the voter fatigue a little bit on that. Sure. But he's so far and away the best player in the league that he deserves another MVP. I'll say this too. It's interesting, like, this observation I've been making just about this wave of players in the league. And there's this trend that I think Jokic is starting, where it's like, the most important trait you can have is to be a primary facilitator. And if you're an excellent facilitator and you let the game come to you, everything else will fall and take place and fall into shape. And that's not like, you know, giving phenomenal scorers and players like, you know, Luka. That's not like saying like these guys aren't good. They're certainly not. They're great. But I just think like this idea of like prioritizing facilitation is really important. And it's like, I don't know, like, I know like there's been a little rough stretch here in Indiana, but I think about like Halliburton and how he plays. I think even like a guy like, you know, he's in a position that's like a score first, like an Anthony Edwards. Like, Anthony Edwards is a score first guy, but like, and, you know, and so is Luka is a score first guy, but those guys too also like have this ability to get their players involved. So I don't know. That's like an observation I'm making. When we were growing up, it was just like all about the scoring, like all the time. And that's what mattered the most. But I feel like there's this trend that Jokic is kind of ushering in, where it's like prioritization around facilitation. And if you can do that, everything else kind of just falls into place.
100%. And when you think about it from a basketball angle, like, you can plug any type of player around a guy like Jokic. Right. Like he, cause he is just going to make the right play. So like, it doesn't matter what type of players you put around him, he will bring out the best in them. Whereas if it's a score first guy, like, they have to fit with the right type of players for the team to be good. And Jokic is, I can't remember a guy since I've been watching that can literally be the best player on the floor and dominate a game and shoot five shots. Like, he has like seven of those games a year where he shoots less than 10 shots and it's just completely controls the entire game. And I mean, to me, that's like the separating factor of why he's the best player in the world right now, because he's the only person you can say that about.
Yeah. Well, so we're going to talk about him probably until we're blue in the face, cause he's always there's always something to talk about. But before we get into the cards, let's hit like a nugget of no recent comps. I'd be curious, is there anything that sold this past week that is in kind of the no recent comps category that is worthy of note to talk about?
Yes. And I included this one on Saturday's no recent comps newsletter. It was one of the six cards. It was the 1999 Peyton Manning Stadium Club Chrome first day issue refractor out of 25. It was a BGS 9.5 True Gem. Might have been a True Gem Plus, but it was the first, I think it was the third copy of that card to sell ever. So it's a very rare card. Obviously, there's only 25 copies. It's not a mainstream card. Like, player collectors and like real 90s football and 90s collectors in general know about this card, but it's just not a card you see, you know, on social media, just floating around. Everybody's got their favorite player of that card, which makes it more appealing to me. But the first day issues, from what I understand, literally like the first day that they issued the card, they stamped the first 25 with the serial numbered out of 25. And then the rest, like there's the Stadium Club Chrome Refractor that is just like, I don't even know if it's numbered. I don't believe it is. It might be, but it's not, you know, they weren't stamped and issued on the first day. So that's the difference between the two. So kind of a little backstory there. But, you know, they just don't surface often. It's the third public sale of that card. It's the second year Manning card. So it's an early Manning card, beautiful card, and it did like 1300. So it's still relatively affordable, which is another reason I really like the card. We featured the PSA 8 Barry Sanders in the newsletter probably like a month ago, and it did right around that same price, which lines up. Like Barry's usually Barry, Jerry, and Peyton are usually the top three, when it comes to 90s football. So, just a cool card. It was cool. Pulled up Instagram this morning, and our guy Drake had actually posted the card that he won the card and gave a nice shout out. So it's always cool when you see where the card ends up after it sells.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So congrats to Drake out there. I know he's listening and just accumulating just Mannings on top of Mannings, like always. That guy's collection is something. I think
he just has like a room full of Manning cards.
I know he does.
Just like a wing of his house is just Manning cards.
Yes, he's going to need to expand his home in Arkansas to, at his rate, to create a vault, and it'll just be the Peyton Manning vault. And at some point we need to get it all documented, because I don't know. I love any chance we can see his cards in his collection. It's pretty fun. So
for sure, man.
Before we get into the cards, maybe for anyone who didn't listen last week, you want to plug, kind of offer what you've got going on just for anyone listening.
Yeah. So we talked about the No Recent Comps newsletter. We put that out every Saturday. It's free. We highlight six cards that haven't sold for a long time that are live at auction. Dive into the weeds of this, you know, sales history, comparable sales, all that kind of stuff. And then on one of the cards, we kind of do a deeper dive on kind of why that specific card is important. Maybe how it was released, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have the No Recent Comps online community, where it's you know, kind of a big group chat, buy, sell, trade community. And then you can also get more favorable rates on our PWCC consignments. But that's our bread and butter right now, is PWCC consignments. And we sell every type of card. It doesn't have to be just No Recent Comps. And you can find all this stuff on our website, thewharfsportscards.com. You can go to @thewharfsportscards and follow me on Instagram. And there's a link to everything there. But for Stacking Slabs listeners, we still have the Stacking 50 promo code, where you get $50 off your first consignment with us. If you enter in that promo code on the submission form, and you'll see how to submit right there through the link. It's pretty simple, but you can always DM me if you ever have questions.
Awesome. All right, let's jump into some cards. So I always love to look at a card that where there's 20 bids in the cards at like 2K and there's 7 days left. Like when I saw this card on eBay, I was like, I don't know, it didn't even register into my brain that this card could exist. And I was just like, man, like there's so much nostalgia I have as I look at this card. And I'm going to call out the card first, which is the 1999 Fleer Brilliance Cal Ripken Jr. 24 karat gold in a PSA 9. That's a card. When I saw it, I was like, oh boy, this card's going to do something. This card had me looking back on Cal Ripken Jr.'s streak, right? The Iron Man. When we think about him, we think about his streak, and it's so absurd. Like, so the streak started in 1982. It ended, he broke the streak in 95, and that's 2,130 games played, did not miss. And then in 98 is when he decided to, I'm going to take myself out of the lineup. And so he was at 2,632 games without a break when the streak ended. And then he went on to play until 2001. So like, I don't know. You think about players across any sport and you think about players who show up to work every day, and not only show up to work every day, but it's like, we're talking like, you know, greatest in their respective position. And I don't know, Kyle Ripken Jr. is just like one of those guys. Like, I'm so fired up when I saw this card. I was like, man, I got to go like back in, like, I remember being a kid when he broke the streak. I want to go back and just consume so much Ripken content. And I know that we have talked so much about just 24 karat gold, and this card is just so cool. So like, that was one, like, I'm not a baseball card collector. I'm not a baseball guy necessarily, but this card, like, a rush of nostalgia washed over me when I saw it.
Yeah, man. I mean, the card itself is gorgeous. Like, I think everybody knows about the 24 karat gold by now, but like, when you hold that card in hand, it does all the talking for you. So it's a beautiful card. In his career, man, that streak it's crazy to think about, because there's 162 baseball games a year. Like, they play like 5 days a week. And he was, I know you could argue, like, you know, it's not as taxing as basketball and football. And yeah, you're probably right. But like, you throw in all the traveling and how long the games are, and 162 of them a year. And like, today's NBA, it's like, you got to like blackmail people to play, you know, 70 of the 82 games, and they get paid like $50 million a year. I mean, it's crazy when you think about all that context. And then he did it for whatever, like 16 years straight. Like, it's insane and impressive. And I love that he has gray hair in this picture too. Like this is a playing days card, the 17th year card, playing days, fully gray hair. I mean, I love it. I vividly remember watching Cal Ripken growing up in the 90s and being a baseball fan, especially in the 90s.
No doubt about it. The other thing just to note here is I could not find any comps on this card.
So I believe it.
So look out for that one. That one ends in 7 days. It ends in March 11th. So excited to see that close. We're going to move over to this one. And this one, just, I had to laugh when I saw it. And this is the 2019 Prism Bull Bull Gold Prism. This ends on eBay on March 12th. I picked this card for so many reasons, most notably for, we all remember where we were when Bull Bull was Bull Bull and the moment happened and the card market exploded. But the reason why I picked this card is because it is so funny how the hobby always just hobbies. And Bull Bull had like a 25-point performance off the bench in Phoenix the other night. Yes, he's still playing. He's playing in Phoenix. And then this card shows up for auction. So some of that Bull Bull momentum, it's still there. So this card too, like, I was looking at it up, the last sale was October 21st, 2020, in a BGS 9, and this card sold for $2,000. So that's interesting. So I just, when I saw it, I kind of laughed because I had seen someone post about him having a good game. And here, you know, here's one of Bull Bull's best cards available for auction.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the starter pack for Instagram cards is like,
yes,
talk about their good game they just had and then post your card of them for sale.
Exactly.
But I love it because I'm looking at the game log and I remember seeing that 25 points and 14 boards and they lost.
It's a good game.
It's a great game. But if you look at the games before, he had 9-5 the game before, played 14 minutes. He played 2 minutes the game before and didn't score. Like, I love Bull Bull because you just get every side of the spectrum with him. Like, you get the, like, he doesn't even care to play right now. And then it's like, oh, he's, you know, the unicorn of the NBA, you know, the pre-Wemby unicorn. But I mean, it's interesting to me, but like, I'm interested to see where this card goes because that last sale being 2000, I mean, if this thing does 1500, I feel like that's still a really strong sale. And he's so young. Like, I think he came in when he was 19. So he's probably like 24 years old. I mean, they're still, like, crazy as it sounds, like, don't give up on him yet. He's on a really talented team. So like, throw him on a team that's not very good and who knows what he could do. So it's intriguing.
I think what he has in his favor, regardless of what happens for the rest of his career, is that there are people in this hobby that love nostalgia and forever. I look at the 2019 Prism product and me coming back in the hobby and Bull Bull being such a figure of that. that like this card is going to mean something to a large group of people, whether it's good, bad, funny, whatever, but it's going to mean something to people for a very long time based on the era of when it dropped in. So I'm excited to see where that one shakes out. And let's see here. The last card that I picked was just because it's topical, relevant. We can't get out of one of these episodes without talking about a Bowman Chrome U card. It is the 2023, which will be a second Bowman U card. Caleb Williams, Orange Refractor out of 25, PSA 10, Auto 10. This card ends on March 11th. It has 13 current bids during the time of recording. You know, it's all about Caleb Williams right now. The Bears are going to trade Justin Fields, and it looks like Caleb Williams is going to Chicago. I know he had somewhat of a polarizing combine just based on, you know, him not being out there, the way he talked about his medicals. There's people are starting to put up red flags. I think let the dust settle, let this guy step on the field. He has shown tremendous talent. He's shown an opportunity to, make big plays. So I'm excited to see how the Caleb Williams thing shakes out. But as a Notre Dame fan, looking at him in this ugly ass USC jersey, I can't believe I actually picked this card. But yeah, I think it's at $510 with 7 days left, 13 bids, and it's a college card. So again, like part of the reason is topical. Caleb Williams is in the news, but also it's like this is another college card that's going to probably, you know, perform well. And I think these Bowman Chrome U cards, and I heard this too from I think the Ship Shawana show, is like Caitlin Clark was the hottest card in the room, and there a lot of people are selling Bowman Chrome cards. So I think like with NIL and just the way it's all shaking out, that the narrative always has been like don't buy college cards, but it seems like there might be an opportunity and they might have some longevity just based on how this all shakes out.
I tell you what, it's made me more interested in college sports. Like I've faded from college sports over the last several years and become more and more of a pro fan. And I think it's probably partially due to being so deep into the card world, right? Like I'm rooting for these guys on their pro teams or from their pro careers. So the Bowman Chrome college angle is really interesting to me. I've been buying Bowman Chrome football cards, like mostly like receivers and stuff. And it's made me want to watch those guys' career more. It's made me want to watch them in college more. And honestly, it's going to make me want to collect them once they're pros as well. And I think there is significance to those cards. Like, you know, you look at the baseball market and yeah, it's a pro card, but their Bowman Chrome first is like it's their big card. It's technically, you know, when they're in the minors, but so it's a little bit different. Like it might be, you know, a White Sox uniform, but it's a White Sox minor league player. Whereas this is a totally different school and uniform. So I don't know how much of a difference that'll make, but like to me, this will be their first significant licensed trading card. And I think that holds value over time. And I'm watching this one closely. I'm a Washington Commanders fan and we have the number 2 pick. So like, are the Bears going to draft him? If they don't, are we going to draft him? Are we going to be silly and trade up, you know, the rest of our drafts to move up one spot and draft him? I hope we don't do that, but I wouldn't be mad if we ended up with him at number 2, that's for sure.
No doubt about it. All right. This card rules. You picked it's the 96 Topps Finest Mark McGwire Intimidators. What a great insert for him to be in. A refractor with coating PSA 10. So this card, like, why'd you pick it?
Dude, I mean, just what you said and then look at it, like it's an Intimidators gold refractor. He has a full mullet, like greased back mullet with a Ninja Turtles headband on, cut off sleeves, flexing the guns. It looks like in batting practice. And if you know Mark McGwire in the 90s, like that's steroid McGwire right there. And I know the baseball purists, you know, they hate everything about the steroid era. But if I'm being honest, that was my favorite era of baseball. You got Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, the Bash Brothers, and you got McGwire in the Cardinals era, going, you know, against Sosa for the single season home run record. I'm 2 hours from St. Louis, so I got to, you know, and 5 hours from Chicago, so kind of in the middle of both of them. So I got to really live that era. But this card just brings back so much nostalgia, and I feel like it just totally aesthetically represents Mark McGwire from the 90s. But it's a It's a PSA 10 gold refractor. These don't sell often. It's a super affordable card. It's going to go for a few hundred dollars probably. But man, it just brings back a lot of good baseball memories for me. And it's a sick card.
Just real quick, like what do you make of the steroid era guys? And it's just interesting. It seems like I'm not in the weeds on baseball cards, but it seems like there's like definitely a segment of the hobby based on like the nostalgia too, like that, like don't care. Like they're going to collect the cards like Bonds and McGuire and stuff. So, but like, what do you make of like the steroid era guys that are likely not going to get in the Hall of Fame, but how do you think, like, does it impact their cards negatively? Like, what do you think?
There's two sides to it. For me, it doesn't impact their cards negatively at all. It honestly makes me want to collect them more because I feel like it reminds me of a very, like, I can just look at this card and go directly to a specific era of baseball and remember everything about it. And you can't always do that with other just, you know, random players from random eras. I think the vintage collectors really hate the steroid era. I think it's just like a natural clash of like pure old school baseball versus like this guy cheated the purity of the game and ruined all the historical stats for the game. I think the way baseball votes in the Hall of Fame is a joke, which kind of frustrates me with, you know, continuing to follow and continuing to be a fan of baseball. It's just, it's very dinosaur the way they run everything. And I think there's some friction there between collectors and that whole idea of some of the truly best baseball players to ever play not being allowed in the Hall of Fame because of the steroid era. So, I mean, it doesn't affect their cards for me, but I'm not a baseball purist. So take that into consideration.
I love it. All right. The next one, what do you know? Who are we talking about again? Mr. Yes. Jokic, the 2015 Panini Preferred. This is eBay too. 2015 Panini Preferred Silhouettes Rookie Patch Auto out of 99 PSA 8 on card auto from Crown. What do you got to say about this one?
This is a little bit more to do with like Jokic's rookie card market. It's very limited. He doesn't have an NTRPA. He doesn't have a flawless RPA. He only has an immaculate RPA from like the bigger brands, right? I think he has a Spectra RPA. That's a sticker. There might be a couple others that are like tertiary brands, but I think that bumps this Preferred Silhouettes RPA up a notch from what it would normally be if he had an NT, a flawless, you know, all the goods. There wasn't a Donruss Optic set that year. So there's just a very limited selection of high quality rookie cards for Jokic. And so I think that makes this one a little bit more desirable and collectible than it normally would. It's still going to be, you know, a 2,500, 3K card, even with the PSA 8 and you know, whatever you want to call that. I guess it's a napkin patch or a single color patch. Auto is pretty good. Like, Jokic's autos aren't always great. We have seen a few out of 99 sales, so it's not necessarily a no recent comps card, but I just think it's one of the nicer looking RPAs for Jokic at a little bit more affordable price than an Immaculate. Like the Immaculate goes for a PSA 8 would probably be like 8 to 10 grand right now, potentially, depending on the patch and the auto. This one will probably be 2,500, maybe 3K. So it's really just a playoff of his limited rookie card market.
Yeah, I think that you've got a player that's, you know, about to grab his third MVP and a guy that was a second rounder and wasn't talked about a lot. So his card inventory, especially from a rookie perspective, is super limited, which I think makes some of these like off the beaten path type of products that maybe aren't super fresh in the hearts and minds of collectors. It makes them more interesting. So I love that one. You've got one more before we talk about the cards that people are sending to you. And what do you know? It's the 99 Bowman's Best Atomic Refractor, Kurt Warner out of 100 PSA 10. If we've got a second too, I've got a couple Kurt Warner stories. So, but let's talk about the card first.
Okay. Don't let me forget about those Warner stories. We got to hit on those. I want to get your take. So we talked about the 98. It was the basketball atomic. So it was a little bit different design than the football, but they're still both the cracked ice from 98. What are your thoughts on the 99 design here versus the cracked ice? I got to tell you, like, this design is really close to the 98 for me. Like, it just, every part of it glows. Like the outline of the player glows. Like, it's kind of hard to see in the picture, but when you're holding the hand, it like really reflects. And there's lines across the card. Like, it's very reflective. It's shiny card, but a totally different design than the cracked ice. Which one do you prefer? And is it close or is it not even close?
I think I prefer the 98, but I've always been fascinated by the drastic difference between the two and how they're the exact same parallel. With that being said, like, the card itself, based on it being just the aesthetics of it, I think are unique. And although it's the last year of the 90s, like, there's something about this card. Maybe it's the Rams uniforms, but also the design that feels very 90s to me. I don't know. Like, I feel like Warner too is like one of those players that he's a Hall of Famer, but I feel like still, like, his career was remarkable. I mean, hell, they even made a movie after him, but I feel like just collector base might not be quite there as opposed to some of these other all-time great quarterbacks. So he is always a guy that I think about, like, when I think about, man, if like you're just starting a collection of a Hall of Fame quarterback who probably still had some room to grow, he might be one of those guys.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I think that's one of the things I love about him. Like, for me, like I said, I'm 2 hours from St. Louis. So like the greatest show on turf was like a huge deal for us around here. Warner manning the show. You got Falk in the backfield. You got Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt out wide.
They were tough.
Yeah, they were tough, man. I mean, they were so far ahead of their time offensively. So a lot of nostalgia there. And Warner's story is just crazy. Like, you take into consideration how hard it was to just break into the league and get an opportunity. Like, that kind of delayed his career. And then the way he just took the league by storm once he got that opportunity, won MVP, won a Super Bowl. Like, when you think of Tom Brady, you're probably going to think of Kurt Warner, because that was the first Super Bowl clashes for Brady. And that was the first Super Bowl he won was actually against the Rams, and Kurt Warner in the greatest show on turf. So, I mean, a lot of nostalgia for Warner. I do think he's an underappreciated quarterback. I mean, if you look at the all-time stats, he might not be like overwhelming to a lot of people, but when you really understand and followed his career, like, he was one of the best to do it. And he did it for multiple teams. He took the Arizona Cardinals to a Super Bowl and had the lead with a few minutes left against the Steelers, and they lost that one. But amazing career. This card's out of 100 PSA 10. Because he wasn't in the earlier 90s stuff, like, this one probably catches a little bit of a premium. If he had, you know, if he was in 96 and had the 96, 97, 98 Atomics, this probably wouldn't be as expensive as it is, but it's probably going to be around 1,000, I think, these are running. But if I was a Kurt Warner collector, I would want this card in my collection for sure.
Yeah, and it's a pop 10. This one's on PWCC. I've had literally two run-ins with the Hall of Famer. One of them, I was on my senior year in spring break in the Bahamas, and I was at the Atlantis, and I was, you know, probably a little intoxicated, ran into the bathroom and went to go do my business. And literally, I just hear these footsteps, and all of a sudden, like, a guy, there's a divider there, but a guy comes up and, you know, it just felt like a towering presence. And I shit you not, I look up at left corner of my eye, and it's shirtless Kurt Warner taking the lead by me. And it's just literally a dark Atlantis bathroom. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So, like, we're washing our hands. I'm looking at him, like, we're looking in the mirrors. And I just, like, had a little bit of liquid courage. And I was just like, man, I really appreciate watching you play. And he's like, thank you. And that was it. And then the next time I went over to my lunch break to get a new iPhone case, Warner walks into the AT&T store when he was doing Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football is in town for the Colts. And literally it was me and Warner again. And he is just besides himself, losing his mind in this AT&T store, because on his flight in, he had lost his phone. So he was like just trying to like figure out his options, and he was just not in a good place. And I was like, this is probably a time I should not say anything to Kurt Warner. But I just, every time I hear Kurt Warner, I'm just like, how bizarre, like, basically one-on-one interactions with this guy. But every time I see his cards, I think of those moments.
And 50% of the times you've ran into Kurt Warner, he's had his shirt off. So that's impressive. That's impressive, man. I think if you would have said, hey, do you remember me from that time you in the bathroom when you didn't have your shirt on? He probably would have said, yes, I do.
No doubt. All right, let's we've got three more cards, and these are cards that you've got knowledge of, because they're being sent to you to sell through PWCC. So let's start with this first one, which it's a pretty cool card. It's the 2003 SPX LeBron James rookie patch auto out of 750 BGS9 on card auto. Is that correct? Yes. Am I seeing that right?
It is.
All right. Talk a little bit about this one.
Yeah. You almost have to look a little closer to make sure it's not a sticker, but it is not a sticker. LeBron RPA. It's a little more attainable than like the ultimate and the SP signatures, with this one being at a 750. So, you know, a little bit more chances to obtain a card like this. But I just think I'm intrigued by, you know, LeBron signing this new deal and maybe signing cards again, signing stuff again. I'm curious to see what those autos look like, for one, because it's fascinating how much shorter and quicker players' autographs get the further along in their career they get. So I think early autographs will matter more for that reason. And just because, you know, this one specifically, it's a rookie auto. So those are always going to have a little bit more significance. The patch here is, you know, a napkin patch. It's a maroon patch, standard for this card. I have yet to see a patch on this card that isn't a napkin. I think I've seen gold ones and maroon ones, and that's it. So, you know, standard patch there. But it's shockingly a pretty big card still. Like this BGS 9, I think, does like in the 5,500 range. BGS 9.5 sold at Golden recently for around 10, I believe. So, you know, a lot of respect for LeBron rookies in RPAs.
And this has got a 10 auto and ends on Sunday in the PWCC weekly. I look at his baby face here and I'm just like, did this guy know he was about to score 40,000 points? That's a topic we didn't get to, but awfully relevant. So very cool card.
He did that against my Nuggets, so I didn't bring that up on purpose.
There you go. All right. The next one, not a card you see every day, is the 07 Ultimate Collection. But by the way, Ultimate Collection, every time I see an Ultimate Collection card, I'm like, these cards, I need to spend more time digging through these. But this is the Kobe Bryant and the Iceman George Gervin dual patch auto out of 25 on card. It is so cool to see George Gervin and Kobe Bryant's autograph together on the same card. And this is a BGS 9.5/10 autograph.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to correct myself on the 9.5 LeBron SPX that sold at Golden. It did 7,300. I said around 10, it was 7,300. So I want to make sure I note that. But yeah, this card, this card is sweet, man. Like George Gervin, I mean, you just don't see a lot of George Gervin patch auto cards out there. And, you know, I think he was one of the more underappreciated old school players. Like he was so smooth with the way he played, like such a prolific scorer. And I mean, just a long, smooth, athletic player. So, you know, a little bit of appreciation for Gervin. I think he's kind of just, you know, an underappreciated NBA player all time. Seeing him on there with Kobe, really, really clean autos. Ultimate Collection had some super, you know, just impressive cards from the early 2000 era. A card you don't see often, only 25 of these. So I'm a big fan of dual patch auto cards of players you don't see together all the time, right? You always see Kobe, LeBron, you always see Kobe, MJ, LeBron, MJ, you know, Magic thrown in there, but like, you just don't see many Gervin dual patch auto cards out there.
You do not. I've never, this is the first I've ever seen a card like this, but very cool card. Ends on Sunday, PWCC Weekly. And to close it out is a player that I felt like was such in the conversation for so long and has been away because of injury and various other reasons. And this is the 2019 Prism Premium Blue Shimmer Ja Morant autograph BGS 9.5. Man, there was a time where it seemed like these were the cards that everyone was talking about and going for between Ja and Zion, talking about the 2019 bull of it all. These were like the pillars of that era. Maybe share some perspective on this card.
Yeah, man, what a class. Like so much has happened for that 2019 NBA class. And like you said, just the trajectory of the cards from when those products were released, like specifically Prism, and like when it was released, the Zion hype, and then Ja kind of like doing what he did and kind of stealing some of that hype, maybe a little unexpectedly to some. Bol Bol thrown in the mix there with his whole, experience, let's call it. But this card, yeah, I mean, it's super interesting to me because of where we are with Ja right now. Like he had the whole incidents with the guns or whatever last year and the suspension. He came back and really was like pretty dominant early on, like some huge wins. They won like the first five or six games against really good teams. He was scoring at will, playing really well, and then, you know, got hurt pretty quickly there and season over again. I'm really curious to see how he comes back because I root for a kid like this. He's made some dumb mistakes, right? But like, I'm not going to judge his whole career and life based off those. Like I always hope that somebody like this can overcome that stuff and learn from it and be better. And I think the league is better with him in it. If he's in a good place, he's a super exciting player to watch. As a Nuggets fan, I prefer him not to be in the league because the Grizzlies are not a threat right now, which is nice. But man, super exciting to watch. This card is like $750 card right now. I think it was a $3,500 card early after release. So I think, you know, if you pick your spots and you understand it's a gamble, like I think Ja Morant cards are intriguing.
No doubt about it. There's no denying his ability on the floor. And I'm a big fan too of second chances. And he did come back. And I mean, they were tough when he was back on the floor. So excited to see what is in store for him when he comes back next season. I mean, dude, we just covered a lot of ground. there's just a ton to talk about. So I'm excited, obviously, to get this one in the can, share it with everyone. There's a ton of cards to talk about, ton of stuff that I'm already thinking about after this. And definitely if anyone's interested in consigning their cards, sending them to you, hit up that promo code stacking50, get $50 off. Nick, this isn't stopping. We're doing it again next week. So keeping that drumbeat alive.
Yeah, man, a lot of fun. It's crazy when I look at the recording at the end, and I think we talked for 30 minutes, and it's been over an hour, and we didn't even touch on everything, it feels like, which is great. That means we're having fun, and this is something that we enjoy for sure. Next week's cards, next week and especially the week after that, the next 2 weeks should be really, really good with consignment cards, but also cards that are just out there on auction. I've already been some kind of pre-screening for the newsletter and for the pod. There's a lot of cool and fun cards that we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah. For all you fans that always reach out and say you want longer episodes, here you go. Nick, until next time, I'm looking forward to doing this again.
Same, man. Have a good week.
Always enjoy catching up with my man, Nick. I thought it was interesting to talk about the Luka sale in comparison with the Mahomes. A lot of fun cards in the auction space right now. A lot of sales going down. This is fun. I feel like I have a better pulse of what's going on in our hobby and in the auction world. Hopefully you're feeling some of that too. Stacking 50, promo code for Nick. If you want to send your cards to him, $50 off your first purchase. Link is in the show notes. You take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. We'll be back. More Stacking Slabs on the other side.